following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Gazette News Group presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, for the 499th episode of the podcast, and it's Wednesday, and it's our weekly visit with Union Men's head hockey coach Josh Halji. Josh, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going well. Yourself?
Hanging in. Can't complain. Getting excited about the 500th episode on Thursday. It'll be a big one, and going to have some fun with that. But let's talk about the Union Men's hockey team. They returned to ECAC hockey play last weekend with games at Quinnipiac on Friday and at Princeton on Saturday. And what has been the theme of ECAC hockey play so far for Union? The Garner Chargers split the weekend, losing to Quinnipiac 7-2, and then beating ECAC hockey leading Princeton 4-2 on Saturday. Just your general thoughts on the weekend.
You know, obviously disappointed with Friday. I thought, just some attention to detail and got a little flustered when things didn't go our way early in the game. But, has kind of been, par for the course right now is when our back's against the wall and we really need a win. The guys have responded, and they did that on Saturday.
Well, let's begin with the Quinnipiac game. The big decision heading into the contest was who was going to start in goal. Braden Gillespie had made three straight starts, including a 31-save shutout on a 4-0 win over Quinnipiac on December 6th at M&T Bank Center. But Cameron Corpy, who was pulled in the third period of his December 5th start against Princeton after allowing five goals, got the start against Quinnipiac. What led to the decision to start Corpy?
Yeah, we kind of came with the determination that we wanted to get, one guy a game on Friday and one on Saturday. Just the way it went, felt like we were going to give Cam that opportunity. And, obviously the game didn't go our way. A lot of that, I think, was on us, and Cam was, hurt by the way we performed.
Even though Gillespie had the 31-save performance, it was, didn't want to go with him and just went with Corpy.
Well, at the end of the day, that was a month ago. Cam was kind of sick during that time. He came back and was healthy and had a good week. I think Braden has definitely earned his opportunity to split time there. But I just felt like the matchup, that was kind of how we wanted to go with it.
Well, Union does get off to a good start as Carter Corpy scored 4:26 into the game to give the Garner Chargers a 1-0 lead. But 18 seconds later, Braden Blase ties it for the Bobcats. I mean, how frustrating was that?
Yeah, you can't have that response, and we get kind of caught outside the dots, and then our defenseman comes back and loses his feet and falls into Cameron, and next thing we aren't there to pick up the back check.
Well, with 11:01 left in the first period, the tie turns against Union, and that's when Garner Chargers defenseman Tyler Dunbar's knee connected with Bobcats forward Mason Marcellus' knee as the two were going after the puck in the neutral zone. Marcellus fell to the ice in pain. Neither referee Ryan Sweeney nor John Lupinick raised their arm to call a penalty on the play. While Marcellus was being attended to, Quinnipiac coach Rand Pecknell asked for a video review to determine if it was a major for kneeing. And after watching the video, the refs ruled a 5-minute major and game misconduct to Dunbar. I watched the play a few times, and I don't think it was worthy of a 5 in a game misconduct. It looked like two players going after the puck. Neither player stuck out their legs. It was just an unfortunate play. I don't think it was even worth a 2-minute penalty, and you lose one of your top players. How angry were you?
It was frustrating. Anytime you get a 5-minute major, it's something that is tough, and to lose Tyler for the game as well was extremely disappointing. And he's been for us as valuable of a player as there is. So we want to get him on the ice as much as possible, especially in such a big game.
Well, there was a similar situation in the Princeton game that we'll talk about in a few minutes. 5 seconds into the major power play, Antoine Vareau scores to give Quinnipiac a 2-1 lead. Not long after that, DJ Hart takes a slashing penalty, so Quinnipiac has a two-man advantage for 2 minutes. You were able to kill the Hart minor, and then the Bobcats take a penalty to end the power play. Did you feel fortunate to only allow one power play goal during that situation?
Yes. You give one up 5 seconds in, and then you're down 5-on-3, most of the time, you're going to give up more. So I thought we did a nice job battling. But what that also does is, you have two defensemen that are out there like working really hard on the 5-on-3, and you know, we're already down, you know, Will Felicio's out and now Tyler Dunbar's out, so we're overplaying guys because of a, you know, a lack of discipline. And I think that was you know, kind of the start of the downhill spiral.
I mean, it should have, I think Killen, you know, Gillen only allowed that one power play. Should have given Union some momentum and said goals of a minute 14 apart by Andon Sorbonne and Ethan Wittenbach late in the period gave Quinnipiac a 4-1 lead. I think on that last one, a Quinnipiac player stopped right at the net and sprayed some snow into Cameron Corby's face, and I don't think he saw that that last goal. But what was the mood like in the locker room at the end of the period?
I wasn't in there much. It was not good when I was probably in there. There's, you know, I was disappointed with our response. I was disappointed, you know, just it. I was frustrated as well. So you look at the situation. It's 4-1. We had some opportunities. We didn't finish, and you know, yeah. So that's just it was. I thought that they responded well. We thought we came out at least and competed there in the second, but. You know, it didn't go our way.
Well, then when the second period begins, you make the goalie change, inserting Gillespie. What led to that decision? Was it performance-based with Corpy, or was it a change to make the made to wake the team up?
I think it was a little bit of both, in the sense that I don't blame any of the goals there on Cameron. Like, it wasn't like, hey, that's a really bad goal. Like, you can see how any one of them happened. You know, would you like to see him make a save? Yeah, you would, but I just thought like we needed a jump start, and you know, Braden's been that guy for us. They've been a good 1-2 punch as far as, you know, picking each other up, and we made the call.
Well, Union had two great opportunities to score early in the second. Ben Muth's ball hit the post on a right circle shot, and then the Parker Lindauer lost control of the puck coming in on a breakaway. If they score there, it's a 4-3 game, and Union is back in it. I mean, Quinnipiac, in effect, puts the game away with two goals in the second. Tyler Borgula scored on a 3-on-0 at 13:44. What happened there?
Well, again, when you lose two defensemen that we did, you know, guys are playing more minutes than they should or playing in different situations than, you know, we try to give guys opportunity in practice to play in different spots, but it's not like live bullets. And I think that's what you saw there. I think a couple mistakes, just we didn't catch a pass, two guys run into each other, and then it's a nightmare of 3-0.
Getting back to the missed opportunities, I mean, how much did that really hurt the team? Because, I mean, like I said, you know, Muthesbog scores there, Lindauer scores there, you're back in the game.
Well, and those are guys for us, like, that. Those are the guys we want with the puck on their stick, and they got those opportunities. You know, they're extremely talented, and, you know, if they're not scoring, that's when we get into a little bit of trouble. So I think it just kind of compounded everything, and now all of a sudden, a 4-1 game where it maybe is a little closer feels like it's even that much out of reach.
Yeah. With 18.8 seconds left, Matthew Lansing skated out of the left wing circle unchecked in the Union zone. He went to the front of the net and lifted a backhander over Gillespie's glove to make it 6-1. What's the message in the locker room at that point as you get set for the third period?
That the third period's, you know, it's just practice at this point. We're trying to get back to our detail, get back to the way we know we can play. And you want to try to just, you know, win that period and show a little bit more semblance of structure. Because I thought at times there in that second, there was just not a lot of detail to our game. And, you know, we just had to wash it. We believe in the group. We believe in, you know, who they are. And, you know, just let's respond.
Quinnipiac gets an early third period goal from William Gilson, and ETN Lessard scores a power play goal for Union, which lost for the sixth straight time at M&T Bank Arena. You and I talked after the game, and I sensed some frustration in your voice. I mean, how frustrated were you?
I was just, again, disappointed. Like, you can deal with a little bit of what happened. You know, guys might have an off night, but just our commitment to execution and executing as a connected group was down. And, you know, that for us, like, it can't happen. There's only, at this point, you know, now we have 13 games left, and we're right in the hunt to, you know, be in the spot for a lot of different things, whether it's home ice, whether it's a first round bye, or, you know, putting yourself in the position to be in a large team in the NCAA tournament.
Especially with Union hosting the NCAAs this year at MVP Arena. So, well, let's move on to Saturday's game at Princeton. The Tigers entered the game on a 6-game winning streak overall, and they were 9-0-0 at historically frigid Hobie Baker Rink, the best start to a home campaign in the facility's 108-year history. 108, if I could talk properly. But Braden Gillespie starts in goal for Union, and Princeton strikes first as Julian Fancinelli scores 8:48 into the game to give the Tigers a 1-0 lead. But Ben Muethersbaugh gets that one back 2:50 later off of a turnover. So it's 1-1 after one. Did you like the way the team played in the opening period?
Yeah, I thought there was much more consistency from us. I thought it was funny. I thought that there were going to be no penalties called all game because the refs were letting a lot of stuff go, and it didn't turn out to be that way, but that's how it started.
Well, you lead in that because in the second period, we have another kneeing situation. Princeton's David Ma collides with Union's Colby MacArthur. Referees Cameron Lynch and Tom Steinel Jr. called a 5-minute major on Ma for kneeing. Unlike the incident on Friday, this was cut and dry. Ma stuck his knee out and made contact with MacArthur's knee. Colby crawled back to the bench and had to be helped to the locker room. Unfortunately, MacArthur wasn't seriously hurt, and he returned to the game. Meanwhile, Lynch and Steinel reviewed the video and determined, much to my surprise and probably yours as well, that it was not worthy of a game misconduct. And this really infuriates me. The inconsistency, we saw this earlier with the stick infraction, the contact today where Ben Muethersbaugh in the Clarkson game gets tossed and a one-game suspension for which was really, I thought, inadvertent high stick. And then in the Colgate game where Carter Corpy gets cross-checked in the face mask and the referees really review said, well, the stick rode up. So were you given an explanation as to why either referee didn't call a game misconduct?
Oh, yeah. They just said that they didn't view it as intent, so that's where they went. And I think maybe we've been talking about it a lot as a staff, is like, what's the solution to the inconsistencies of this? And it's like, can you have a center where all of college hockey, all the clips go in and they make those decisions in real time? I don't know if that's just completely
like a war room like they have in NHL and Toronto. I don't know if they can ever do that with college hockey. I mean, they probably have something on the, I guess, an NCAA tournament they'll have upstairs. But, there's got to be, I thought there was more intent in that one than there was in Tyler's situation on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Tyler's was, he's not trying to knee anyone. He's not, like, sticking his knee out. So, it's frustrating you talk to, the people in the league, and they understand where you're coming from, but it's a tough job, the referees, and they got to make the calls based on what they think and how they view it. I just wish there was a way that you'd have just a couple people making the call so they're always together and always getting a consistent
Have you talked to head of officials Peter Fiola about that?
Yeah, I mean, we talk on a pretty regular basis, and he's very open to anything and everything to make the league better and college hockey better. So he's always an ear when you need it.
He's one of the best referees when he was on the ice there. But unfortunately, Union does not score on that major. Princeton gets a power play late in the period when Alex Lorenza is called for holding with 4:05 left in the second, and Jackson Esmond scores with 3:34 left to give the Tigers a 2-1 lead, and Princeton takes that lead into the locker room. What are you telling the team in the second intermission?
Well, I thought we were doing a lot of good things, and just sort of for us, just sticking with our process. And it was talk about that we needed it, and we gotta respond, because if you don't get that game, there's definitely a lot of points left on the table. So.
Well, Union is determined not to lose this game, and the Garner Chargers tie it at 2, 4:34 into the third. Tyler Dunbar right point shot went wide, but the puck carried perfectly off the backboards and came to Brandon Burr on the left side of the net, and he stuffed the puck in. Could you feel the momentum shifting at that point?
Definitely. I thought that we came out strong in the third, and it just kind of kept leaning on him, and eventually we were able to, break through.
Yeah, 1:29 later, Union grabs the lead. Nate Hanley wins a faceoff in the Princeton right circle and draws it back to Dunbar. He skates to the left circle and then fires a wrist shot over goalie Arthur Smith's glove. I mean, how great of a sequence was that?
Yeah, it was a really nice play. Starts again with Nate's draw, wins it back, and then nice fake shot by Tyler to get around, and then that opened up everything with our forwards kind of giving little subtle picks and giving him a little extra time, and When Tyler has time, like you usually expect him to finish.
Yeah. Well, Union protects that lead. Smith is pulled for an extra attacker. Then with 54.6 seconds left, Hanley gets the puck in the Union left circle and fires it toward the empty net. The shot appears to be going wide, but at center ice, Princeton's Tyler Rubin raised his stick and tried to knock the puck down, which would have led to a high stick violation had one of his teammates touched the puck. Instead, the puck changed direction and went into the empty net to seal the deal. Union wins and has a happy drive back to Schenectady. I mean, how pleased were you with the way the team bounced back from that Friday loss?
Really happy, and again, that's kind of what we expect from them, and we expect it on any day of the week.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Union's upcoming schedule, which features three games in 4 days this weekend. And we'll talk about that in just a moment here on the 499th episode of the Parting Shots podcast.
It's a battle night in and night out. ECAC hockey, an iconic conference home to 12 of the most prestigious universities and programs in the world, and showcasing the best student athletes in the sport. Top-notch facilities and arenas, incomparable traditions, passionate fans, alumni who go on to become elite professionals, leaders, and champions. ECAC hockey, there's no experience like it.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Welcome back to the 499th episode of the Parting Shots podcast. I'm Gazette Union hockey beat writer Ken Schott, and I'm joined by Union Men's Head Hockey Coach Josh Halji. Union has an interesting schedule of games this coming week. The Garner Chargers will play a pro-style schedule with three games in 4 days. It starts Friday with when the Garner Chargers host Brown at 7 p.m. at M&T Bank Center, followed by a 5 p.m. game at home against Yale. After a day off Sunday, Union visits Harvard at 4 p.m. Monday. That game would have been played on January 31st, but Harvard is off that day because the Bean Pot Tournament semifinals are on February 2nd. How is the team preparing for this stretch?
You know, just trying to manage our workload. I think that, you know, yesterday we were a little lighter than we normally go, and then, you know, today was, we shortened it up. Just to try to make sure we have fresh legs. Sunday we'll skate briefly. So for the most part, it's been, you know, business as usual. We want to compete hard when we're practicing, but we want to make sure our duration is a little bit lower.
Well, let's talk about Friday's game. First of all, we need to discuss the pattern Union has gotten itself into with the ECAC hockey games. Union has played five Friday ECACH games and lost them all. In five Saturday conference games, Union is 4-0-1. Is that pattern frustrating?
Yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, we don't want to continue, and we want to correct you know, this Friday. I think you look at it, it's weird that, you know, you can win out a conference on Friday nights, but we've struggled at for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think you're 5-0 in non-conference Friday games.
Yes. So, one of those things that it's just got to be better, and everybody knows the stats, everybody's kind of talked about it, and you know, it's really come to light this week, so I think hopefully the guys are aware about it. And the one thing with this group is when their back's against the wall, they've always responded, and I think they're trying to use this as a little bit of a challenge for us to say, hey, like, our back's against the wall right away here on Friday.
What do you have to do to snap the pattern? I mean, you're in seventh place right now, 4 points out of that last first-round bye slot, which is occupied by Cornell. Cornell has two games in hand on you, so how important will it be to, you know, snap that little pattern?
Yeah, there's definitely some games this year we've left on the table, and that's frustrating, but you can't go back in time and change it. So for us, it's just about our preparation, and it's, you know, again, we've talked about our backs against the wall. We got to have that urgency right away, and you know, I truly believe we'll be ready to go here on Friday.
Well, let's talk about Brown. The Bears are 3-7 for 10 points and 4-13 overall. They snapped an 8-game losing streak on Saturday when they beat St. Lawrence 4-1. No matter what Brown's record is, Josh, it always gives Union fits. Why is that?
Well, they have, you know, some very talented players, and I think that, you know, for them, they defend really hard and want to protect the middle of the ice. And in the past, they've had really strong goaltending. You know, this year, they've been playing two different guys, so we're going to have to make sure that we're getting to them. I believe we'll probably see Shea, but I just think you got to take away space from St. Louis and Nichols, and you know, they have a couple other guys that can, you know, really make plays up front.
How important will it be to start strong?
I think that's kind of been for us when our detail is really good and we're physical at the start of games. You know, I think that's where we're at our best.
Well, Yale has an interim head coach in Joe Howe after Keith Elaine surprisingly resigned in August. The Bulldogs are 4-6 for 12 points and 5-11 overall. The record may be so-so, but how do you think Howe has done under the circumstances?
I think he's done a great job. You know, I know Joe very well. He's a good person, and he works really hard. And you know, he's made good decisions, I think, since he's took over.
Well, Yale has a familiar name on its coaching staff, Matt Bodie, the captain of Union's 2014 national championship team. He's an assistant coach for the Bulldogs. Unfortunately, he won't be here on Saturday. Bodie spent several years playing in Europe and retired at the end of last season. It would have been cool to have him in the new building, right? Because I know he was here for the 10-year anniversary and had a chance to tour it when it was under construction.
Yeah, that's disappointing. I think we are all kind of looking forward to saying hello. He's a great person, and I think he's going to, you know, really make a mark in his coaching career. You know, Joe called and just kind of asked what I knew about him before he hired him. And obviously, I don't know Matt as well as other people, but just the amount of good things you hear about him and just what type of person he was and my interactions with him really are exactly the same as what I hear about him.
What do you know about Harvard?
Extremely talented, as always. You know, if you give them time and space, they can really hurt you. And yeah, they're a really good hockey team.
Two big questions. First, is defenseman Will Felicio ready to return to the lineup?
Yeah, I don't see any reason he won't be unless something happens from now until Friday. He's been practicing all week. He looks good. So yeah.
Second question, who starts in goal Friday?
But I let the guys know on that. But I think, you know, at this point, I think everybody kind of probably knows what we'll do.
Well, we always like to take questions from our listeners, and Jim Calhoun had a follow-up question to my question. Are there any plans to go the split goaltender starts again this weekend?
You know, I think at this point we're going to go Friday and then reevaluate. I don't think – last weekend we had you know, the mindset that we were going to split. You know, with playing three games in 4 days, you definitely got to be careful, and we got to make sure that we, you know, monitor them. But yeah, we'll see what happens after Friday.
Well, Andrew Jarrett, a 1980 Union graduate, had some observation and a few questions. He writes, "It seems to me that teams have been taking shots at our talented but undersized 19-year-old defenseman, Will Felicio. They finally landed a blow a couple weeks ago. I am interested in your thoughts regarding defensemen. Should defenseman effectiveness be measured more by plus-minus while on the ice or pure defense skills? To what degree does no better defense than a defenseman scoring a goal enter your mind when recruiting offensive-minded defensemen?"
Well, we believe in a few things when we're recruiting defensemen. One, we want people that are athletic, that are going to be able to, you know, get up and skate and play in the rush. But just the way they think the game and the way they move the puck is really important. With that being said, like, they picked a position for a reason, and that's to defend. So I think if you can't defend, you can't play. We're really fortunate that our offensive defensemen, like Will, like Tyler, like ETN, like they're extremely good defenders, and they compete really hard. So that's another underlying factor for us, is just how hard they compete.
What typically are the challenges of being an undersized defenseman?
Well, I think that you're always judged by how offensive you are when you're an undersized defenseman. You know, I think people, you know, sometimes let undersized D get away with defensive, you know, making some defensive mistakes. I think just your ability to defend net front is a challenge. You know, when you got, you know, like somebody who's 6'5" standing in front of the net, like how you can either keep them there or move them out.
He has a fun question. Here he says, I do not see any change in the position of players from defense to offense or vice versa at this level. Has coach ever seen it? What would be difficulties in doing that? Would Felicio make a good forward? Would he be less targeted playing there? Would players generally be open to such a switch?
I think that it's easier for a defenseman to move to forward than it would be from a forward to move back to D. Will actually was a forward growing up. So funny story about Will is he was a goaltender actually when he started, then went to forward, then they moved him back to defense. So he's been all over. I don't think Will would want to move to up front. I've never even thought about that. I think he's a really good defenseman. We love the way he moves pucks. We love the way he gets up in the rush and, he can contribute to our offense, but he's really an underrated defender as well.
Well, Union professor Brian Cohen writes, now that they've had a chance to settle into their new home, is there anything you would like to tweak? Are there any home improvement projects that are at the top of the list or maybe items that you did not anticipate needing that would be at the top of the wish list?
I think the one area we've talked about is just a designated shooting area. That's been the one thing that we've been trying to work on for the guys, that they always have an ability to, you know, shoot pucks when they're not on the ice. Other than that, I mean, really it's minor things here and there, we're just trying to figure out like the doors in the arena, because everything now is a key code and how you can get in, remembering the codes or different things that way. So it's been really good, though.
I'm still waiting for the roof covering over the press media room for the post-game press conferences.
That definitely.
That's got to be. That's on top of my list. If I had the money, I'd donate it, but I don't have the money. But Brian also asked, do the coaches use any analytics in the decision-making, either in-game or in deciding who to play in a given week?
We are very detail driven based on analytics. We have a few different softwares that, it's independent companies that take stats and, it's a lot of AI, information that we get based on puck touches, based on, the way they break pucks out, way they defend, way they possess the puck or hold onto the puck, the decisions they make with it. Everybody's kind of given a value, on each game and their performance. So we do look into that. But with that being said, we also rely on our gut and just our what we see, our eye test.
In recruiting, do they look for players based on anticipated needs given when guys will graduate? Or is it based more on how they see them fitting the system? Or is it best available?
So it is my belief at a place like Union College where we really try to value the person and make really good decisions based on every player, to really recruit based on what we're going to lose. I think you've seen a lot of teams in college hockey stockpile players. I probably could build a better hockey team if we recruited 40 guys and just, we're cutthroat and cut guys based on what we thought was the best need for each fit. But I really believe, and I hope our players believe, when we give our word, we mean it, and we want to honor that. So when we make a commitment, we try to stick with it as best we can. It's a little bit of like best available for the need we have, and we're not gonna run players out if we can get 1% better. Like, we're gonna try to stick with what we can do.
Ryan Fay asks, Union has a pro-style schedule later this week with the 3 games in 4 days. How might that kind of stretch impact preparations, intensity of practice, and any extra challenges it presents for coaches or players?
Boy, I think there's a lot of us managing their workload and making sure that we're not overtaxing them here this week. So, like I said, yesterday was very, very short. Today was our duration was, and we went 52 minutes and 36 seconds. If that was not to the second, but that's how long we went, because we start and we stop. We wanted to be under 60 minutes today. We're trying to be intense when we go, but we want to be very mindful of their time and not waste any of it. And, there would have been one or two drills we probably would have liked to do today, but at the end of the day, them being fresh on Monday is more important. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the questions, everybody. And if you have a question for Josh, you can email them to me at SHOTT, that's SCHOTT, at DailyGazette.com, or you can post them on Facebook on my personal page and the Parting Shots podcast page. You can also send them via Blue Sky, X, and Threads at SlapShots. The Daily Gazette ECAC Hockey Face-Off selections are back for another season. I'll post my picks, usually on Wednesdays, and then you can send your picks to me. I'll post those on Friday before the first game to play. Send your picks to the shot at dailygazette.com. Well, Josh, good luck this weekend, and we'll talk after the games.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in as usual. It's Josh Halji. Coming up on Thursday's podcast, it's the historic 500th episode of the Parting Shots podcast. It's going to be an expanded show. I'll talk more Union men's hockey. I'll have interviews with Nick Young, Parker Lindauer, and Braden Gillespie. I'll preview the Union women's hockey weekend with games at St. Lawrence and Clarkson. I'll have interviews with head coach Tony Macy, defenseman Stephanie Bork, and forwards Jill Willis and Maddie Leaney. The Union and RPI women's hockey teams will each have a player who are heading to the Winter Olympics next month. Union goalie Monia Wagner will play for her native Switzerland, and RPI forward Nina Kristoff will play for her native Germany. I'll speak to both of them. Jake LaHut, former Daily Gazette news reporter and NISC Union native, who is currently a freelance reporter covering the person occupying the White House, will join me. Jake had the first sports podcast in 2018 before I returned to the paper after an 11-month hiatus. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the current state of politics in the United States of America. Finally, my good friend Freddie Coleman of ESPN Radio joins me to chat on a variety of sports topics. I hope you tune in to this special episode. Views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Gazette News Group. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Gazette News Group. I am Daily Gazette Union Hockey beat writer Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good hockey.